is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line here on a Monday morning. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. If you missed out on hour number one, make sure you check it out in podcast form. Just search Lombardi Line wherever you get your podcasts. And also, make sure you check out the latest GM Shuffle podcast that just dropped into your feed. GM Shuffle, once again, wherever you get your podcast, subscribe, rate, and review. Check it out on the DraftKings YouTube page as well if you want to do more of the visual aspect of it. Make sure you like and comment on those videos. But a new GM Shuffle where we broke down Dallas Cowboys training camp. I went out there this past weekend for the Friday and Saturday practice, and we also broke down some of the big headlines over the weekend in the National Football League. But we'll start this hour number two with, of course, what's on Michael's mind. And we're not just football here. We're also checking out what's happening over in Paris for the Olympic Games.
Femi, I got to tell you, look, I am all in on USA. I root for everything, yeah. and I want us to win every single one. I'll let the Italians finish second, but first for the meal service program. But I got to tell you, I don't even know. Like, I couldn't tell you who won the 100 meters. Like, I really couldn't. I have no idea. Like, I still don't know who won. I see a foot over. I couldn't tell you. Like, I don't know how they called that. You know, I don't know how they called that. I really don't. Could they have had a tie? I thought it was more of a tie than it was a win.
I guess I think you can technically have a tie where both sprinters would get a gold medal, then it would go down to silver and bronze where like four people get medals. But I mean, this was like razor thin. I'd never seen, and I've been watching the Olympics like pretty much my whole life. Like, I've never seen a 100 meter race this close. And people are saying that it's maybe the greatest 100 meter race in the men's history, maybe in all of history, men or women, because it was, I mean, razor thin. I guess the naked eye, you thought that it was the Jamaican sprinter who won the thing because his foot crossed first. But then we learned that the foot does not count, which is kind of the funny, like the foot doesn't count in a foot race for some reason, that it was the clavicle of Noah Lyles, the American sprinter, that crossed first, that broke the plane first, though he technically won the race. But yeah, it was 0.005 tenths of a second. Like, it was incredibly close. But USA, we got the gold. But yeah, it's naked eye. I think the broadcast thought the Jamaican sprinter won because they kept following him until there was a little bit of a silence and they got the clarification. And in fact, Noah Lyles was actually the person who won the race.
Americans won until he put his hand up in the air. I'm like, oh my God, he won.
Yeah, it was crazy. It's a great, like you watch it and you just like, I think Jamaica won, but no, Noah Lyles came through with the 100-meter race. And, I mean, the Olympics have been awesome. Have you been enjoying, like, the basketball? We've been watching that. The swimming? The swimming's been off the charts. Katie Ledecky, four straight Olympics, she won the 800 meters in the 800-meter freestyle. Like, that's incredible. Yeah. She went at 15 years old back in 2012, and now she wins it at 27 years old here in Paris.
It's one of my favorite things to watch is the Olympics, because as a kid growing up, watching, you know, there was a runner out of Oregon named Steve Prefontaine, who was Dave Waddle, who wore this cap, and the track and field events were tremendous. Because remember, when I was growing up, we didn't have all the 175 channels and you know, and all the streaming service. You know, you got what you got, and you took it, and you were happy about it. You know, and so I got addicted. I loved it. I loved the gymnastics. I wanted to get the Russian judge eliminated on almost everything, you know, but I thought it was really good. And so I enjoy it. I really do. But sometimes you just get caught up in it and you just can't figure it out. Like, I think the gymnastics, I marvel at the athleticism of both the men and the women in those things. They're just the power that they have. You can learn a lot studying those athletes too, which is kind of fun for me. And of course, I watch your boy Embiid in the NBA. I watch that too.
Yeah, we got the Olympic there playing in the quarterfinals against Brazil tomorrow. I believe it's around this time, so I'm sure you'll get to be doing the show, and then you get that second screen experience with Embiid and Team USA taking on Brazil. That'll be a fun matchup. I mean, we're expected to win gold in that one, but it's still fun to see all those guys playing together, and it's fun basketball. So I'll definitely be glued to that stuff. But yeah, I didn't get to see the men's 100 meter live because we're in Oxnard and we're hanging out and doing that stuff. But I saw in the prime time, and I was like, wow, like I would not have been able to call that one. But luckily for Noah Lyles, who was a world champion going in, this was always kind of the last kind of barrier that he had to break through. Can he win Olympic gold? And he was able to do that. It was the first Olympic gold medal in the sprints for us in 20 years. Like the Caribbean nations like Jamaica, and we saw in the women's St. Lucia, they got their first ever medal winning the women's 100 meter dash. Like the Caribbean sprinters have been really, really dominant.
They've been great.
But Noah Lyles was able to break through for the USA as we're now back into the gold medal stand for us in America. So that was fun. I mean, in 4 years from now, maybe we'll defend home turf in Los Angeles for the 2028 Olympic Games, which I think will be a whole lot of fun. But for those of you who missed it in hour number one, we spoke with Thomas Gable as well as Ken Barkley from You Better You Bet. Any takeaways from those conversations? I know that you and Ken agreed on the Seattle Seahawks, that over 7.5. You wrote about that. Well, that was like back in like May. You wrote about the Seahawks over. And so some people are starting to catch up to that opinion of, hey, like this team might be better than what we all think, even though they did lose a really good coach in Pete Carroll.
Yeah, but I think they got a good coach in Mike McDonald. I'm going to spend next week out there at the University of Washington, and I'm going to get a chance to really I'm going to get together with some people at Seattle and talk to them. But I think to me, he fits what they need so badly, right? They couldn't play defense last year. And I think it's one of the things that Pete never really could get a handle or fix when he was the head coach there is, how do I get that defense? Ken Norton fires him, then hires someone else, fires him, then brings Ken Norton back, fires him, and then goes to Clint Hurt. And then it's just been disastrous. I mean, they're 24-17 at home, and they shouldn't be that bad at home. And I think McDonald will come in and do that. And then, you know, having been involved a little bit with the University of Washington and Jed Fish, I've heard a lot of conversations about Ryan Grubb, about from the players that were there. And they all love Grubb. They all felt like he was instrumental in the success of Michael Penix and the success of their offense. So, and what Ken said in the last segment, too, is that you know, the offensive line and Grubb together.
Yeah.
Really works out.
Yeah, no, I think that's really good for the Seattle Seahawks there. The offense, as good as it was last year, they can maybe even take a next step forward. But the defense and what McDonald can bring to that unit, that's where they really need the help. And if they play, like, let's just say that they improve from bad to average, like, you're talking about, you're going to be back to that 9 win total right there, and your win total is at 7.5, to where if you go over, I think that that should be a pretty solid bet for the Seattle Seahawks. Any dinner plans that you have out there in Seattle, Michael? You're being my old neck of the woods out there in the Pacific Northwest, buddy.
I'm going to be out there with Coach.
You'll have plans. I'm sure you'll
have. No, I won't. Hey, I'll be with Coach Belichick out there. Okay. He's going to spend some time out there when I'm out there, so the dinner plans will be at the University of Washington cafeteria. That's where the dinner plans will be, wherever they are.
Well, if you need any recs, just shoot me a text. You know, we can get you, situated.
I will.
No Pike Place Market for you? You're not going to catch the fish? None of the tourist stuff? You're not doing it?
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm out there to get something done. I'll be back. I'm coming back on Tuesday, and then, you know, getting ready to go to work, because we got to get ready for the season. I mean, I'm really looking forward to the football season, and we're going to be in a groove. You know, once these preseason games start to come around, we're flying. That's what makes this week so good in the NFL. And I think it's really important to get a good handle on, you know, these preseason games, because I'm going to write a column this week about what to look for in the preseason games. But more importantly is, we just can't say, well, they're not playing their starters, right?
Yeah,
you got to take a serious look at who is playing and how they can add to the team. Everybody evaluates teams in preseason. You really don't. You evaluate sections in preseason. Like, what's that line look like? What's the Raider line look like? What do the Giants line look like? You know, how does Atlanta's defensive front look? Who their backups? You know, because at some point, like the Bears backup, a defensive line was playing last week. Well, that wasn't very good against Houston's backup. So if they lose any starting defensive linemen, that's who's going to be playing. And that won't be pretty.
Yeah. Is that the section that you should be focusing on the most? Is it the offense and defensive lines? Because I remember you talked about it like in the last segment with Ken, and we discussed this ad nauseum last year, like this time last year. Carolina, we saw those first preseason games, and it was like, whoa. This O-line is horrendous. Like this, we might need to abort mission here and get off of this Panthers train, and they ultimately had the worst record in the league. Like, is that where you're looking and focusing most of your time?
Most of the time, you want to see coordination. You want to see fundamentals and techniques. You want to see, like, I remember when the Raiders played Jacksonville, the opening Hall of Fame game, how bad Jacksonville looked in that game.
Yeah.
Their pad level was high. You want to see how they've been practicing. You want to see players get off blocks. You want to see football. You want to see how they're reacting to football. How all of a sudden, you know, when you were at practice with Dallas the other day, you're watching certain drills. Well, they know it's running a drill, or they know it's passing a drill. What you want to be able to see is when they don't know what it is, when they have to get, okay, here's what's going on. I think that's really the key. And so that's what you're looking forward to in the preseason games. And look, the for the quarterbacks, having a good preseason for the quarterbacks has never proven to be beneficial to anybody. I mean, look, Aiden O'Connell was great. He had, you know, he comes in, he doesn't play well, right? You know, we've seen Sam Ellinger play great in the preseason, can't play in a regular. So, you know, I think you got to be really careful.
Yeah, how about Kenny Pickett last year? I mean, that guy was tearing it up in the preseason. It got me excited about the series. I said, oh, here we go. And all of a sudden, like, they had this had the slow start. They eventually found their way when Pickett was benched and or hurt. Like, that's when they started winning games, ultimately winning 10 games and going to the playoffs. But we all thought that Kenny Pickett was going to take that year two step after watching him in the preseason, and that didn't really translate to the regular season. Speaking of which, an old Pittsburgh Steeler quarterback, not Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, according to Jim Wyatt, has been looking very comfortable and remarkably accurate behind starter Will Levis. By my count, Rudolph has completed 64 of 76 passes in team and 7-on-7 drills combined. Completion percentage, 84.2%.
I mean, look, if he can't beat out Will, I mean, I think Will Levis is a marginal starter. We'll see how this all works out.
We'll see. Maybe there's a nice little QB2 battle out there in Tennessee. We'll be back on the other side. It's the Lombardi Line. If you haven't heard, VSiN is now proudly owned by Musburger Media. And to celebrate, we're offering our lowest price ever, a special 3-year offer. This week only, get 3 years of VSiN Pro for just $350. That saves you over 75% off the monthly price. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get instant access to everything we do, including the daily best bets, the betting splits, the betting systems, analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video access, plus access to all our betting guides. This limited time offer is available to both current and new subscribers. And if you're an existing subscriber that would like to add 3 years to your account, please email us at subscribe@VSiN.com. Or if you're looking to subscribe to VSiN for the first time, please visit VSiN.com/special to sign up today. That's VSiN.com/special.
The appointments are lined up.
You waiting for somebody in there?
Got an appointment.
And it's not about what you want to hear, but what you need to hear.
It's not personal. It's strictly business.
It's time you and me had a private talk where step into my office.
It's Step Into My Office with Michael Lombardi. Mr. Lombardi, we'll see you now.
Oh, yeah. My watch says 2:15 Eastern, 11:15 Pacific time, which means we got some appointments on deck. And this one will start in Las Vegas, and it's a twofer. Both Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew stepping into the office. What do they need to hear?
Well, we got a lot of room in this office, family. We got a couch over there, too, that I probably got to sleep on sometimes.
It's a corner office.
Look, I think at the end of the day, both of you have to play within the framework of yourself. But I think more than anything, somebody has to become the leader of the team. The team takes on the personality of two people, their head coach and their quarterback. Sometimes the quarterback doesn't have any personality. He kind of blends in. Like, you know, and then a defensive player can take over. Trent Dilfer in Baltimore, Ray Lewis was really the straw that stirred the drink. So you both of you have to decide who's going to become the leader, because defensively they don't have anybody over there that's going to take it over. Crosby's a wonderful player, but there's got to be leadership offensively, or else Davante Adams is going to become the leader and he's going to be complaining to both of you that he's not getting the ball all the time. So somebody's got to step up, and the only way you can lead is produce. The only way you can lead is to endear your teammates to a sense of belonging, and you guys have to create that. It has to be created by what you do on the field, without making mistakes, without having dumb plays, without putting your team in jeopardy. I think more than anything, if you study the history of the National Football League, more games are lost than they are won. When you give a game away all the time, the Giants 2 years ago won 9 games, didn't play particularly well. They just didn't give games away. Last year, you know, Seattle won 9 games, and when they didn't give the game away with turnovers, they were really good. So what you have to do is play within yourself and hope your defense is good enough. Let's face it. You beat Kansas City in Kansas City on Christmas Day. You didn't complete a pass after the first quarter, and yet you won the game. So for you guys, it's got to be somebody lead and somebody play within the comforts of themselves.
Yeah, as head coach Antonio Pierce told the media, says stop with the baby steps and be the guy is what he's looking for between Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. Up next, a person who's familiar with the office, used to be in Chicago, now it's moved to Pittsburgh. Justin Fields, new Steelers quarterback, what does he need to hear?
Justin, what you need to hear is tell everybody to shut up. Like, just shut up. Like, you're competing for a job. You're not competing for the MVP of the league. Don't put anything in front of yourself. It really was unfair to you as a young player that they put that much pressure on you from the outside. MVP voting, leading the Bears to the Super Bowl, doing all these things. You were never ready for that. And it was unfair that people did that to you, with a worldwide leader included. Don't call your boy Danny O back on the phone. Ignore him, all right? What you need to do is just focus on being the best player you can be for Pittsburgh. And you could become the starting quarterback if you do two things really well. Protect the football, number one. And two, take what the defense gives you. Let Arthur Smith's offense carry it. And then when you have the opportunity to add your flair within it, then add it. With your legs and your ability to run, because you can really do some incredible things with the ball in your hands. But you cannot play if you're going to turn the ball over. The Steelers won 10 games last year. They lost to New England. They lost to Arizona. The reason they won that many games, they didn't turn the ball over. They were always in close games. They found a way to win games in the fourth quarter somehow, some way. They were not talented. They were not the best team, but they made the playoffs. You have to play within the framework of yourself. And you can't turn the ball over and stop the noise. Don't let anybody, any chance you get to talk to the media, make sure you tell them, look, I'm competing for a job. I don't have a job yet. Make sure you lower the expectations. Make sure you are really doing everything on the field to give yourself a chance to win, but reminding people you're competing.
Yeah, watching an interview with head coach Mike Tomlin this past weekend, he was saying that the thing that he liked about Justin Fields was his professionalism and how he's gone about his business. And just kind of continue, which what you're saying, continue down that road, quiet the noise, just focus on what you can do and protect the football to the best of your ability. And maybe, just maybe, when you look up, you might be this week one starter for the Pittsburgh Steelers. All right, let's go to the Rocky Mountains with rookie Broncos quarterback Bo Nix. What does Bo Nix need to hear?
Well, Bo, I think one of the things that you did really well at Auburn, probably almost as good as Caleb Williams, was the ability to make a play after the play broke down. And I think that's going to be your main thing here with the Denver Broncos, because Sean's going to put you in a really good situation. He's going to want you to execute the offense exactly how he tells you to do it. And when the play breaks down, you got to be smart with the football, protect the ball. Again, Denver won a lot of games last year because they didn't turn the ball over. They weren't pretty. Nobody's pretty. I mean, Iowa's the third winningest team in the Big Ten, and everybody hates their offense. Only Ohio State and Michigan have more wins than Iowa does, but yet they get no credit for it because they're boring. Boring's good, and you have to be boring, and you have to embrace boring. And when you have an opportunity and you can make plays on the move and on your feet, take advantage of it. And let Sean run the offense. Sean made a comment the other day about Williams being back to normal, the big back from North Carolina. We know he's got unique talent. We know he can be a really good player, but he was coming off that knee injury, and he wasn't the same back that he was, averaged under 4 yards a carry last year. You got to ride the big dog and use this good offensive line to help you. But when you have a chance to move around and make plays, that's the strength of what you can do right now. Take advantage of it.
Yeah, Bo Nix, around 18-1 to be Offensive Rookie of the Year. That's obviously further down the road there, but the betting market's betting against him. But if he plays within himself, maybe he'll have a lot of success with Sean Payton, who knows a lot about quarterbacks, helping him in his development process. All right, let's go to Los Angeles and Hollywood, where unfortunately we have our quarterback sidelined to injury. Justin Herbert dealing with a right plantar fascia injury. What does Herbert need to hear during this rehab process?
Just do what the doctors tell you to do. What we don't want to have happen is this thing creep back up in March. It creep back up in December or November, late November, where it's going to affect us making that run that we need to do. And I think you can learn from Joe Burrow last year. Joe Burrow rushed back, and he was so preoccupied with being there for the opening game. He played horribly for the first half of the season, and then he got hurt against Houston when he was starting to play better. And I think, to me, the month of September, if you miss a game or two, You got to hope that you can, Ethan Stick can carry the team through it and see what they can do. But don't rush back, because what you need to be is healthy at the end of the year so you can make your playoff run and listen to the doctors and make sure that you get all the mental reps that you possibly can. Look, this team is going to rely more on the run game than they're going to rely on your arm. That's just who Jim Harbaugh is. So let the offense work for you, not against you. And take all the mental reps that you possibly can, because getting into the right run is really what's going to be the biggest part of your job in 2024.
Yeah, I remember it was a couple of years ago when Justin Herbert was dealing with a rib injury and the betting market thought he was going to miss the game. He ultimately played against the Jaguars, didn't play so well, trying to gut out through an injury. So just listen to the doctors, like Michael is saying. Final appointment, Matthew Judon of the New England Patriots seeking a new contract. What does he need to hear here at Patriots training camp?
Well, I think what you got to do is just be a football player and let your agents handle what they have to handle, because you don't want to get fined. You don't want to be as dumb as Hassan Riddick has been. He's going to be fined for almost $1 million as of this week. He's lost a ton of money in the $50,000 a day fines, plus the backup fines that once he's missed a certain point, plus the $100,000 he missed for rookie. So don't be that. You know, let them come to you. You're a great team leader. You did a wonderful job last year with your injury that prevented you from playing, but it helped you help Barmore gain that contract because of your leadership. I think that's what you got to do. Take the high road, one more year on the deal, and don't say yes to a bad deal. Don't say yes to being able to guarantee yourself a couple million more when next year you hit the open market, you could have a huge deal. Don't take any more years. Take whatever they're going to offer you in incentives or offer you in guarantee this year and move on.
Judon right now owed $7.5 million this season. He's turning 32 years old in a few weeks, so maybe he's looking at this as a potential last chance to get that bite at the apple. No Brandon Ayuk in the office this week?
I mean, he's been in so damn much, I'm tired of seeing him in here. I told the girl not to let him in. I mean, I don't want to talk to his ass anymore. I'm like done with him. Like I told Elliot, I can't. There's nothing I could say to him. I can't get through to him.
Keep him out of the office.
Yeah, I mean, we're not making any progress here. You know, we're not. Yeah. He thinks he's all of a sudden he became Randy Moss.
He said they don't want him, is what he said. The 49ers don't want me, man. I guess I should go find a new team. That is Step Into My Office here on the Lombardi Line. Always a treat every single Monday. On the other side, speaking of a treat, we're going to turn our attention to college football. Zach Cohen, our VSiN.com writer, will join us with all of his best bets for college football this upcoming season. This is the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. If you need all the tools to help you bet in this NFL and college football season, make sure you go to VSiN.com/special. Get in on our special 3 years. You can get all of the guides, the VSiN College Football Guide, the VSiN Pro Football Guide, and one of our writers for the VSiN College Football Guide. As we welcome everybody back here, Femi Abebefe and Michael Lombardi. Zach Cohen, our VSiN.com writer, does great work, betting analyst, breaks down not just college football, but a number of sports, but we'll focus on the college gridiron today, and he joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Zach, thanks for hanging out with us this afternoon or evening, or having morning, I should say, depending on where you are. I want to start off with the Alabama Crimson Tide, because obviously they lose the legend in Nick Saban, now doing media, no longer on the sidelines in Tuscaloosa. Kalen DeBoer steps in. He's been a winner wherever he's been, NAIA, NCAA, all he's done has won games. How do you see Kalen DeBoer and this Alabama team looking at 2024? Do they have the ceiling to ultimately win big like they have used to do in Tuscaloosa?
I think they do. I know it's really early to call for that with them losing a legend like Nick Saban, but I do think you're bringing in, you know, a top five coach of the country right now, a guy in DeBoer that I think is going to get a lot out of Jalen Milroe in this offense really, really quickly. I think that Milroe is one of the best dual threat quarterbacks in college football. He has a really big arm too. So if they do get more out of the wide receiver room than people are expecting, I think they're, you know, the sky's the limit for them. They do play Georgia at home this year. I like what they did on the defensive end, bringing in Kane Womack, the head coach from South Alabama, now the defensive coordinator. He's a really, really good defensive mind. They have a lot of talent there on that Alabama team. He also, you know, I think, met with Nick Saban to try to figure out the best way to fit the personnel that is there. So if they do win that Georgia game, I do think that they're going to be live to win the SEC. That's why I ended up taking Alabama to win the college football playoff at 14-1.
Wow, that's a great play. How about Ole Miss? What's your feeling on Ole Miss, you know, in the sense that they got so many transfers, they were very good on offense. There was a rumor going around last week that Jackson Dart got hurt. Nothing's been confirmed. That was just a rumor. What are your thoughts on Ole Miss as Lane Kiffin enters his sixth year?
I did like the over until I heard that Jackson Dart rumor, and I haven't seen anything to say whether it's true or not. So I don't know what I would do with it now, but I do think that that team is going to be really good if he does end up playing. I think, obviously, it was an elite offense last year. They brought in Juice Wells from South Carolina, one of the best playmakers in the country, I believe, playing for a team that was not very good last year but still stood out whenever he was healthy. And also brought in a JUCO receiver, number one in the country. So another guy just adding talent to that offense. I think defensively, they brought in a lot of five-star players and players with All-America ability. So I think it's a team that is getting better defensively already. And obviously that offense is incredible. So I thought that 10 wins was well within reason if Dart is healthy. And I do think it's a team that should flirt with the college football playoff.
You're hanging out with Zach Cohen, VSiN.com senior editor. Did a terrific job on our VSiN college football betting guide as he joins us here on the Progressive guest line. Well, Zach, we'll stay in the SEC. You know, Texas A&M has been a program that has been a favorite of the Lombardi lines. No longer is Jimbo Fisher patrolling the sidelines in College Station. Now it's Mike Elko. We know that they've recruited their tails off the better part of this decade here. Is this the year that the Aggies finally pop and maybe can contend in that SEC?
I think it is. I really like the over 8.5 with Texas A&M, and I also played the alternate over 9.5 at plus 220. I just think that you're bringing in one of the best game day coaches in the country in Mike Elko, who got a lot out of a really, you know, I thought a team, the Duke team, that did not have a lot of talent outside of Riley Leonard. I thought he got a lot out of that program. He has been successful here as a defensive coordinator in the past, but now, you know, working with the five-star talent that Jimbo did bring in. Jimbo did a really good job of loading up this roster, and while they did lose a little bit on the transfer portal, they still have a lot left, especially in terms of five-star talent that is now going to be, you know, going from underclassmen to upperclassmen. I think Elko could be trusted to get the most out of him. Connor Wegman's a quarterback that I believe is going to be, you know, starting in the NFL one day. And I think that they did a really good job of bringing in Colin Klein, the offensive coordinator from Kansas State. That was a team that was, you know, top 20 in EPA per play last year with a lot less talent that they're going to be working with at Texas A&M. And I also just think that, you know, they have a lot of tough games on the schedule, but a lot of those games are going to be played at College Station. But I really think that that first game against Notre Dame, if they win that game, I think they are going to win 10 games.
You know, Billy Napier's had a tough time in Florida. You know, last year he's 5-7, 4-8 against the spread. He opens up as a one-point dog to Miami. But he does have Graham Mertz coming back, who played well for him last year. But you still like them on the under. I know they have a tough schedule, but you still like them on the under total.
Yeah, that was really tough for me because I do think that the team is going to be a little better than it was last season, but I just think that that schedule is really tough. There's only three games there that I saw and said, you know, Florida's definitely going to win. I think that the rest of them are just really tough. I do really like Graham Mertz. I think that Billy Napier is going to be in a tough situation where, you know, he might be looking, you know, at his job just being in jeopardy, even though he has built a team that is getting better. It's a young football team. They played a lot of teams last year, a lot of the underclassmen last year that are going to be getting better this year. But, you know, they let up at least 33 points in five of their last six games last year. The wheels kind of came off towards the end of the season. I think if they get off to a slow start this year, and they probably will because they do play Miami early in the year, I think we're going to see something similar where the guys kind of, you know, feel dejected towards the end of the year, and they do have some really tough games.
You know, everyone's been kind of dubbing the Big 12 America's Conference among the Power Four conferences, that it's a lot of parity. It could be a wild winner that ends up ultimately winning this thing. How do you see this Big 12 playing out with a couple of new members that have now joined it?
I think it's going to be Utah. I think that Utah was kind of, you know, the class of the Pac-12, and they weren't really recognized as that for the last, you know, 10 years or so. I think that Whittingham is probably a top five coach in the country. They have Cam Rising and Brent Keithy both back this year. Rising, you know, almost 2 years now removed from that torn ACL, played really well in the spring game for them. I think it's going to be a much, much better offense for Utah this year. It's going to kind of catch up to a defense that was elite last year. It was a team that won 8 games last season, despite having some of the worst injury luck that you'll see. I think that this year they're going to put it all together. They're going to be a little bit healthier. And, you know, there's a tough game on the schedule at Oklahoma State, but I think they can afford to lose that game if they win all the others. And I'd be really surprised if they do lose to anybody else.
Yeah, I think to me, One of the things that we talk a lot about in this in the off season here is UCLA, and I saw Deshaun Foster open up the Big 12 conference and kind of embarrassed the program, to say the least. And then he hired Eric Bieniemy as his offensive coordinator. Like, Chip Kelly left for a reason. I think you're right with your under five wins at UCLA. Does anybody even care about UCLA football in Los Angeles?
It's a tough – the last time I overreacted to a press conference this strongly, I was really wrong with, like, Nick Sirianni. I remember he had a really weird one with the Eagles, and he ended up being great. But that was a really awkward one with Deshaun Foster, and I wrote this under up before I even saw that. I just think that it's a team that I think just lost a lot of talent the offseason, also lost Danton Lynn, you know, one of the best defensive coordinators in the country. I would be really shocked if they find a way to win five or six games. That schedule is just a gauntlet. I think there are a lot of games on there against, you know, Big Ten opponents that even look like wins on paper that are going to be tougher. You know, I think versus Minnesota at home, at Rutgers, those are games they could easily lose. I think those are better football teams than UCLA. I'm with you. I don't think that people care much about UCLA football. To take, you know, for Kelly to take a job in the same conference and it's almost a demotion, that's definitely alarming sight for UCLA.
How do you plan to attack the Heisman Trophy market? Right now, your favorite is Dylan Gabriel at +750. Carson Beck right behind him at 8-1. Quinn Ewers is in the mix. Jackson Dart, who we mentioned, Jalen Milroe, Will Howard. How are you betting the Heisman before the season starts?
Yeah, I think if you want to go with one of those chalkier options, I think Dylan Gabriel would be the one I'd go with. I think +750 might not seem, you know, as sexy as a double-digit payout, but still a good number if he wins. It's a guy that has obviously been just tremendous since he stepped on the scene in college football. You know, dating back to when he was a freshman at UCF, he put up massive numbers. Oregon has a really good offensive line. I think, you know, maybe the best group of wideouts in the entire country, a really good offensive coordinator in Will Stein. They'll play Ohio State at home. That's kind of an opportunity to pick up, you know, a marquee win on a big stage. I think if Oregon makes the college football playoff, Gabriel is probably the leader of the pack. At the same time, if you want to look a little further down the board, like, I like Nico Iamaleva at Tennessee. I think that that's the guy most likely to kind of put up the Jaden Daniels numbers from last year. Maybe it's a team that wins only nine games, but if he puts up huge numbers, he's going to be in the conversation. I just think a dual threat quarterback, 6'6", kind of lit up Iowa, a really good defense in last year's bowl game. That's someone to really consider with, you know, Josh Heupel calling plays, a lot of returning talent at wide receiver, and of course an SEC stage playing for a big brand. I think that that's the one that I'd be looking at as the best value play on the board.
Well, I think USF's a good value play too, because with KJ Jefferson and my man Gussie Malzahn's offense, I mean, that seems like the perfect fit, and they could be one of those sleeper teams in the Big 12 this year.
Yeah, a lot of people are really high on Jefferson. They're kind of getting the Cam Newton comps out there because of Gus Malzahn having had him in his offense. If UCF wins 10 games, that's definitely a possibility. I'm a little bit nervous about them not getting to the amount of wins that they would need, but that's definitely one of the teams on the schedule when I was looking at Florida, thinking, you know, that's one of the ones that they're supposed to win, and I'm not sure they're going to.
Yeah, it feels like now with it being a 12-team playoff, maybe you probably have to be in the playoff to win the Heisman this year. Last year, obviously, Jaden Daniels put up the big numbers despite LSU losing the three games, but I think it's going to be a fun season in college football. I can't wait to see how all these changes impact what we see on Saturdays. He is Zach Cohen of VSiN.com, senior editor. Make sure you check out his work over at BettingOnX over on Twitter. Zach, thanks as always, man. Good luck with the bets. Be well.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Good stuff from Zach Cohen, who joined us on the Progressive Guest Line. Michael, can you feel it? Those college football juices, man.
I love it.
They're starting to flow.
I love it. It's coming sooner than later. We got preseason. This is perfect. No more beach days for me.
All right. We'll wrap up the show on the other side. Our 2024 VSiN College Football Betting Guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, a preseason top 25, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. Sign up today and receive both the College Football and NFL Betting Guide, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily Pro Picks, 24/7 video, exclusive data like our betting splits. See all of our subscription options at VSiN.com/subscribe and pick the plan that works best for you. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the final segment of the Lombardi Line. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. Thank you to the three guests that we had on the program today. Thomas Gable, race and sportsbook director over at the Borgata. Ken Barkley of You Better You Bet. And then Zach Cohen, VSiN.com senior editor, who joined us in the last segment and did a lot of great work, as well as many others here at the network, on the VSiN College Football Betting Guide. But Michael, we wanted to spend this last segment looking at some of the Week 1 NFL line movement. I mean, just to say those words, it sounds amazing. And we've seen some big moves already happening right now. I wanted to focus on the ones that had the most movement, but then also some of that moved off of the key numbers. And we'll start with my Dallas Cowboys against the Cleveland Browns. They started off as a one-point favorite. Now the Browns are out to as many as two-point favorites in this spot here. Do you agree with that move, making the Dallas Cowboys a now two-point underdog against the Cleveland Browns on the road?
Well, I think to me, a lot of it's going to come down to what we see out of Deshaun Watson in some of these practices. Have they actually improved? A couple questions for the Browns are, can the offensive line stay as good as it has? And is Deshaun Watson going to play like he did in the second half of the Baltimore game? 12 games as a Cleveland Brown, he's had one half of really good football. And so I can't really get behind it. A lot of this number is being driven by the fact that two things colliding. The Browns are a better defense at home. That's mm-hmm. been proven over last year. And the Cowboys are not a good team on the road. Lost all five games on the road last year. So I think those two worlds are colliding. And I think it makes sense. I think, to me, if this line moves to three, you're going to see a lot of buyback. I don't think it gets to three. I think it stays right here, and it could move a little bit. But there's no enthusiasm about the Cowboys right now.
Have you heard anybody make the case for Cowboys over 10.5 wins this season?
None.
I haven't heard it either.
You know, and I think you got to really research in this game. You really have to research Mike Zimmer versus this style of offense, mm-hmm. right? I think you really have to see how he's handled it, how he did at Cleveland. You know, remember, Zimmer was the head coach when Stefanski was yep. the offensive assistant there. So they really know each other. So that gives, you know, that's going to give Kevin a chance to really understand. He's had an all off season to know how Mike's going to attack him and Paul Gunther, his linebacker coach. I think that's another reason why you have to like the Browns and lay the points here.
Yeah, it's kind of the game within the game. Stefanski, he's not going to be caught off guard by the double A gap pressures that Zimmer's throwing out on third down and all of that stuff. They'll be ready and locked and loaded for all of that. How about the Minnesota Vikings at the New York Giants? The Giants were laying one. Now Minnesota is the one-point favorite, road chalk in the Meadowlands against the G-Men.
Well, I think they obviously paid attention here to the Hard Knocks, or else how else would this number move? I mean, where are the Giants' offensive line is a disaster. And one of the strengths of Minnesota's defensive is their defensive front. You added Dallas Turner, Jonathan Gennard. You know, you've added some, you've Andrew Van Ginkel. You've added guys who can rush and put pressure. And here's the thing that you really like, and I think it's one of the reasons why this line has moved so dramatically, is because Brian Flores is going to come after the quarterback. And what does Daniel Jones not really like is pressure. Mm. It's really hard for him to handle pressure. And so I think, to me, that's going to be an issue.
You know, these are the games that move the most from like just like pure point status. But the ones that had the more significant movement off of the key numbers is what I want to hit next year, starting with the Cardinals at the Bills. This was Buffalo laying 7. Now, it only moved to half a point, but it's a big half point now that they're laying only 6.5. So the Cardinals, who were catching 7, now catching 6.5, as there's optimism about Arizona. And I think people are just, not to the extent that they're pessimistic about Dallas, but people are pessimistic about Buffalo because we've seen it so many times and we've seen them come up short so many times.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right move here. Because look, Kyler Murray, one of the things you've been paying attention to what's going on around the league is Buffalo's safety situation has not been very good. And they're concerned about that. And that's where all the checks come in. And I think that this Arizona team last year proved with Drew Petsick as the offensive coordinator that they could really run the football effectively. And I think if you can run the ball against a smaller Buffalo defensive front, which is what they have, they're a nickel team all the way, right? That really becomes a problem for them. I think it's a good matchup for Arizona. Now, look, I'm not in love with Kyler Murray, as you know. I think that's problematic. But I do think that this is a good opportunity, especially in the opener.
Yeah, and it, you know, Kyler running around in those openers. The Cardinals, it feels like they're always frisky early on in the season. I think the only game that they've been blown out was like when they played Kansas City a couple of years ago and the Chiefs went down there and really put a number on them. But outside of that, we always remember the game against the Titans where it was Cliff and Kyler going into Tennessee and they just laid it on Vrabel and the Titans in that spot where I think many people thought Tennessee would win that football game. The Sunday night game, rematch of what we saw wild card weekend, Rams at the Lions. This was Detroit laying 3. Now it's 3.5. The Rams, of course, have a number of injuries throughout training camp. Puka Nacua's week to week. Havenstein, Alaric Jackson, Jonah Jackson, three of those guys on the offensive line who will be starters this regular season dealing with something. Do you think that's what's baked into this? Or is it maybe the general optimism of, hey, Detroit's going to take that next step and maybe they could be the team that's left standing in the NFC?
You know, there's three games that really appealed to me on this sheet, and this was one of them. I really like the Rams here. I felt like the Rams at getting 3.5 was a good value play because I think the hype for Detroit, I think Sean McVay in the opener, he'll know how to run the ball. Sean McVay against Aaron Glenn, I like that matchup. You know, look, I think to me the Rams defensively will have a little bit of a trouble with the Lions offense, but I think it'll be a really good game. I think it's a field goal game. That half point makes a big difference. But my concern here is what will happen with the offensive line. And I don't think you want to go on the road with crowd noise into Detroit when it's going to be, you know, it's going to be electric. It's going to be a playoff atmosphere there in the opening game and have three offensive linemen not be healthy in the game. For me, I've got to be convinced that Rams line is healthy before I put that one out there.
100%. I think that's the thing. Like, these lines have been out since May 15th. I know we're all kind of just itching to bet some football because we love the sport, but let's at least get more into training camp. Let's get through the preseason, make sure these guys are healthy. You might lose a little bit of value, quote unquote, but I think you would rather know than to go in blind and all of a sudden something goes awry and you're, hey, now you're holding a +3.5 and there's three backup offensive linemen against that Detroit Lions front in Sunday night football. Where are you at with Jacksonville? We haven't talked much about the Jaguars this year since the Trevor Lawrence contract. They were catching 4 at home against the Dolphins. Sorry, excuse me, in Miami. They were catching 4. Catching 4 in Miami. Now it's down to 3.5. So there's some interest coming in on Jacksonville and maybe the market looking to fade the Dolphins.
Well, I think the line should be, I think 4 seemed like a lot. You know, I think we're going to find out about the Ryan Nielsen defense, who's very good. I mean, Nielsen's defense is, you know, they were the third best third down defense. This is Atlanta last year. He was the third best third down defense in the league with Atlanta. He was the fourth best red zone defense with Atlanta. So even though you could move the ball in Atlanta, he was very good in the red zone. So I think that's one of the reasons why this number is going to move down. I would suspect he knows how to play the run and shoot, and they'll do a good job. Do I love Jacksonville's team? No. I think there's some question marks about Miami defensively, too. Where are they? How is their front? They've got a lot of linebackers injured. Brooks has been injured. So I think we got to clean that up a little bit to understand it and see where it is. The other game that jumps out to me, Femi, is how are the Falcons a 3-point favorite over the Steelers?
Yeah, that's and I mean, all the threes pretty much look like they're gone off the board now. It's, I think 2.5 is your consensus number. There's even a 1.5 in the market now. So I think the market was picking up what you're putting down. When that thing opened up, it was Falcons laying 3. I think a lot of people said, you know what, we're going to go ahead and gobble up that 3 and take the Pittsburgh Steelers on the road, catching a field goal. Now, who knows how that's impacted by depending on who the starting quarterback is for Pittsburgh. Is 2.5, is this a Russell Wilson number? Does it go back to 3 if it's Fields, given his regular season record in the past? Like, I think still waiting on that quarterback news from Pittsburgh and maybe even Atlanta as well, hoping that Kirk Cousins can get through training camp since he's rehabbing the Achilles injury.
Yeah, I think that's that. You know, that's where we're not going to see Kurt, but I'm told by people watching Falcon practice that he doesn't really plan off that leg, that it's just not there yet. We'll see how it works out. I mean, you know, again, you, like you said earlier, evaluate the evaluator.
Yeah, that's a tough part about that. And that's the thing, is that Kirk Cousins suffered the Achilles injury. It's not like Rodgers, who did it on like the fourth play of week one. Kirk Cousins did it like about a day or so before Halloween. So maybe he's a little bit behind in the process of rehab. But it was just fun to talk about these week one games and the line moves.
Oh, love it.
We'll obviously talk about this all month long leading up to them. They're a month from Thursday, Michael. A month from Thursday, we'll get that Sunday slate in the National Football League. And we will be locked and loaded, ready to roll. But that does it for this edition of the Lombardi Line. Michael, have a good rest of your Monday, man. Be well.
You too, Femi. Thank you, Femi.
We'll see you later. Sharp Money's coming up next.